Good evening, everyone. Actually, I'm glad to see that Dave's back there doing soundboard. I was afraid it might be Ted. Ted's been teaching me how to do the soundboard, and he was showing me how you can make people sound like girls and make them sound real macho while they were speaking. And so that's kind of concerning me about Ted doing the soundboard. So, Dave, I'm glad to see that you're back there. Feel a little more secure that I'm going to sound okay. Tonight, I'm going to do a character study on the book of Job. And I'm going to go through Job's life and see what lessons we can learn from it. Right now, Anna's passing out a handout with a kind of summary of what I'm talking about. Just a brief outline of Job and his life. Job was a man that was righteous, that God was proud of. God has blessed him with a lot of different things. He had health, he had wealth, he had possessions, he had family, he had children, he had respect. He was blessed in every earthly way. And yet he was still righteous, and God was still proud of him. And Satan decided that part of the problem why Job was righteous was he had too much. So Satan took everything away from Job, took away everything he had, and just as a test to him to see if he would turn away from God. And when this happened, Job's four friends came and comforted him. Just like it would happen if something really bad happened to you, your friends would come and try to comfort you. And the book of Job really is a dialogue between Job and his friends when they came to comfort him. And actually what it turns out into an argument between Job and his friends, unfortunately. But one of the neat things about the book of Job is at the end of the book, God comes down and settles the argument. God comes down and talks to each person and says, this is what you did right, this is what you did wrong, this is what you need to do. Wouldn't that be cool if God did that today? Two countries about to go to war, God comes down and says, nope, you're wrong here, you're wrong here, this is what you need to do, argument settled. That would be cool. But at the same time, I think, well, God may come down and talk to me in some very personal ways, a little more than I'd be comfortable with. So maybe it wouldn't be quite that good of an idea. But the concept sounds kind of neat. But that's what happens in the book of Job. And I think it's one of the cool parts of it. Tonight I'm going to go through 18 different lessons that we can learn from that book. Lesson 1, pray for your kids. Job, chapter 1, verses 4 through 5, says the following. His sons used to go and hold a feast in the house of each one on his day, and they would send and invite their three sisters to eat and drink with them. When the days of feasting had completed their cycle, Job would send and consecrate them, rising up early in the morning and offering burnt offerings according to the number of them all. But Job said, perhaps my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus Job did continually. Job offering good offerings is much today like us praying. He was offering these for forgiveness for his sons and for his kids. And so we need to pray about our kids. We need to be concerned about our kids both physically and spiritually. We need to pray for them continually. In fact, at times I thought maybe something that we need at Glen Acres would be a prayer list for parents to pray about things for their kids. Then again, I think we got a lot of prayer lists anyway, and I might just be getting overly filled on these things. But the important thing is we need to be praying for our kids, and we need to be concerned about their well-being, not just physically, but also spiritually. The second lesson we learn from the book of Job is that Satan needs God's permission. We read in Job chapter 1, verses 8 through 12. The Lord said to Satan, have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil. Then Satan answered the Lord, does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But put forth your hand now and touch all that he has. He will surely curse you to your face. Then the Lord said to Satan, behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him. So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. This is so cool. Satan cannot touch us. There's nothing Satan can do to us as Christians without God's permission. If that doesn't fill us with hope and with praise and with just excitement, I don't know what will. Anything that happens to us, anything, only happens because God said it's okay. We can handle it. He'll be there to help us. That should fill us with excitement, fill us with joy. This is fill us with this peace, knowing that we have that type of protection. Satan could not touch Job. He had to go to God and say, God, please let me touch Job. And God, knowing that Job could handle it, said okay. Knowing that in the end it would be best for Job. lesson four that we learned from the book of Job is depression isn't good and leads to sin. Oops, excuse me. Lesson three is don't blame God. Skip the lesson there on you. Lesson three is don't blame God. Job chapter 1, verses 13 to 20 says the following. Now on the day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans attacked and took them. They also slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone escaped to tell you. And while he was still speaking, also another came and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants who consumed them, and I alone escaped to tell you. And while he was still speaking, another came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands and made a raid on the camels and took them and slew the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone escaped to tell you. And while he was still speaking, another came and said, your sons and your daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And behold, a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house. And it fell on the young people, and they died. And I alone escaped to tell you. Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head, and he fell on the ground and worshipped. You know, it's real easy to see why when Job's friends came to comfort him, they thought that he sinned, that God was punishing him. We see that the Sabaeans came and attacked. So they attacked Job. And they didn't say they attacked the general area around the country. They attacked Job. The Chaldeans attacked. They didn't say they attacked the people all around. They attacked Job. Fire came down from heaven on Job. A whirlwind came out of nowhere on Job. I think if we were living back then, or this happened to somebody today, we'd be going, okay, what's God doing to you? It's easy to see how Job's friends thought this was a punishment to God. Obviously, something supernatural, something out of the normal was happening to Job. And so the lesson we can learn from this is don't blame God. We know from what we've already read, this was not happening because of God. And because he sinned, it was happening because he was righteous, and Satan wanted to take away his righteousness and make him sin. Now, on to lesson four. Depression isn't good and leads to sin. Job, chapter 3, verses 1 through 3 reads, afterwards, Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. And Job said, let the day perish in which I was born, and the night which was said, a boy is conceived. Job wishes here that he was never born. That may not necessarily be a sin, but it certainly shows that he's battling depression at this point. And when she has just moved forward, that this depression does lead him into sin. Lesson 5 and lesson 6 come from the same passage. Lesson 5 is silence is golden. Lesson 6 is weep with those who weep. In Job chapter 4, verses 2 through 8, Eliphaz is speaking, and he speaks the following to his friend Job. If one ventures a word with you, will you become impatient? But who can refrain from speaking? Behold, you have admonished many, and you have strengthened weak hands. Your words have helped the toddling to stand, and you have strengthened fabled knees. And now it has come to you, and you are impatient. It touches you, and you are dismayed. Is not your fear of God your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope? Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright destroyed? According to what I have seen, those who plow iniquity and those who sow it, harvest it. So Eliphaz basically is kind of saying, you know, Job, this happened because you did something to cause it. You know, you reaped what you sowed in some way. It is said when you go to visit people in the hospital or somebody is sick, that sometimes just your presence is enough. You don't necessarily have to say something. I think this is one time with Eliphaz, and a lot better off just saying nothing. Just sitting there. And just say nothing the whole time. Because as soon as he opened his mouth, things stopped going wrong. At times, lesson 5, silence is golden. And another thing I don't want us to miss in this is what this happened to Job. Job just lost everything. This is a really sad story right now at this point in time. If we don't know what happened, we are very sad. A righteous man has lost his children. They have all been killed at one time. He has lost his land. He has lost his respect. He has lost his possessions. He has lost everything all at once. It doesn't say how fast these things happen, but it certainly seems that they happen one after another within a few minutes from the reading of this. And that's sad. I mean, we should be, you know, on the verge of tears at the time reading through this. This is a very sad thing that's happening with Job. And we are told in the Bible to weep with those who weep. His friends, and especially Eliphaz at this point, were not weeping with Job. He was feeling a need to tell Job it was his fault. Now, there will be times when somebody does something and it's their fault, and yeah, there's times you need to correct them. There's a time and place for everything, the Bible says. But that this is not the time. When they're weeping and they're down and they're crying and they're emotional, that's not the time to be trying to correct them. You need to weep with those who weep. Lesson number 7, don't take the bait to fight. Here Job is replying to Eliphaz. Job chapter 6, verses 20 to 25. They were disappointed, for they had trusted. They came there and were confounded. Indeed, you have become such. You see terror and are afraid. Have I said, give me something, or offer a bribe for me? Redeem me from the hand of my tyrants? Teach me, and I will be silent, and show me how I have erred, how painful are honest words. But what does your argument prove? Job had a choice that he could make in how to respond to Eliphaz. He could have said, yeah, you know, in a ways you are right that, you know, people reap what they sow, because that's generally correct. I mean, and he could ignore the fact that this was a direct attack and insult on him. Instead of ignoring it or trying to soothe it over, he attacks back. He says, what does your argument prove? What are you trying to say? What you're saying is wrong. It's false. He basically takes the bait. He was baited into a fight with Eliphaz. Job takes the bait. And we'll see this continuing and what happens because of it. I see this a lot with my kids, Pavel and Hannah. Hannah will a lot of times bait Pavel into hitting or doing something. So pick on him, do something, get Pavel to hit her. As soon as he does, she runs to us, gets Pavel in trouble. It happens all the time. I try to tell Pavel, don't take the bait. She's doing this to you on purpose. I think it's something with little sisters, actually, because my little sister did the same thing to me when I was young. She baited me into it. And we got to be careful when somebody baits us into a fight that we don't take it. Lesson 8 that we can learn from Job's life. Don't walk the line. In Job chapter 6, verse 9, Job is speaking. Would that God were willing to trust me, that he would loose his hand and cut me off. Well, wishing for God to kill you may not necessarily be a sin. I mean, it's not exactly like committing suicide, but it's certainly walking a line. Now, if you've got God on one side, you've got Satan on the other side, what Job is doing, he's going right up the middle. Okay, not sinning, but boy, I'm just getting as close to Satan as I can here. The problem with doing this is you're walking a line, you'll eventually fall a little bit either side. You fall a little bit to Satan's side, which will eventually happen because you're falling both ways. You fall off a cliff. And it's very hard to get back up on that cliff. You know, with God, if you fall a little bit towards him, you're not going to necessarily fall all the way. With Satan, it's just going to snowball effect. And so you've got to make sure when you're walking, you're way over here on God's side of the line, walking close to God. You don't want to be over here close to Satan going, well, I'm not really with Satan. It's just not a safe place to be walking. And that's what Job's doing right now. He's walking the line right down the middle between God and Satan, going, I'm not sinning. I'm not committing suicide. I'm just wishing that God would kill me. And we'll see that it eventually leads him to sin. Lesson 9 is don't join the fight. In Job chapter 8, verses 2 through 6, Bildad is speaking, and he says the following. How long will you say these things? And the words of your mouth be a mighty wind? Does God pervert justice, or does the Almighty pervert what is right? If your son sinned against them, then he delivered them into the power of their transgressions. If you would seek God and implore the compassion of the Almighty, if you appear and upright, surely now he would rouse himself for you and restore your righteous estate. You know, Bildad listened to what Job said, listened to what Eliphaz said, listened to all this. He had a choice to make. He decided to tell Job that his sons died because they were sinful, and if he wasn't sinful, God would restore everything to him right here and right now, and the fact that God hasn't shows that he is sinful. Instead of trying to be a pacemaker, when he saw two people fighting, he joined the fight. And on top of that, he joined the wrong side. He's going to eat these words when God comes down and starts telling people who was right and who was wrong and what he thinks of what was taking place. So, lesson 9, don't join the fight. And a little side lesson, if you do, make sure you join the right side, otherwise God might be giving you a humbling experience. Lesson 10 that we can learn from the book of Job. Sin looks in arguments. Here, Job is speaking in chapter 9, verses 20 through 24. Though I am righteous, my mouth will condemn me. Though I am guiltless, you declare me guilty. I am guiltless. I do not take notice of myself. I despise my life. It is all one. Therefore I say, he destroys the guiltless and the wicked. If the discouraged kills suddenly, he mocks the despair of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the faces of his judges. If it is not he, then who is it? I believe this is where Job makes his foot sin right here. He calls God unfair. He says that there are wicked judges that are giving bad decisions, and it's God's fault. He is saying that the things that God does is wrong, that he is being treated unfair by God, and he doesn't deserve what's happening to him. This is where Job first steps over the line. And I don't believe this is because of the test and the things that happened to him. Because when all these bad things happened, Job worshipped God. He fell down and worshipped God despite all the bad things happening to him. But once he got in this argument with his friends, once the argument started, we find him starting to sin. And that's important because I think that, because lesson 10 is sin looks in arguments. If we find ourselves arguing with people, we want to find ourselves sinning more. Because we'll stop saying things we don't want to say. Arguments lead to us saying inappropriate things, and they lead us to sinning. Lesson 11, sin leads to a loss of hope. In the following scripture, Job is speaking, chapter 16, verses 13 through 22. Job says the following. His arrows surround me. Without mercy, he splits my kidneys open. He pours out my gall on the ground. He breaks through me, breach after breach. He runs at me like a warrior. I have sewn sackcloth over my skin and thrust my horn in the dust. My face is flushed with weeping, and deep darkness is on my eyelids. Although there is no violence in my hand, and my prayer is pure, O earth, do not cover my blood, and let there be no resting place for my cry. Even now, behold, my witness is in heaven, and my advocate is on high. My friends are scoffers. My eyes weep to God. Oh, that a man might plead with God as a man with his neighbor. For within a few years have passed, I shall go the way of no return. Job basically here is saying he has no hope. He's lost hope. And that's to be expected. He just called the God that he put all his hope and trust in unfair. And if we stop sinning, either by calling God fair or in any way, it's going to lead to us losing hope. It's only logical. If we put our hope and we put our trust in God, and then we turn our back on God, we're turning our back on our hope, and we're going to find ourselves losing hope. I mean, it's the only outcome to that. If I was Christians, that's where we're putting our trust, and then we sin against that trust. We are going to lose hope. We'll find ourselves in the same situation as Job is in. Lesson 11, sin leads to a loss of hope. Lesson 12, if we're being attacked as a messenger, this is because we're being a bad one. Here, Bildad is speaking in Job chapter 18, verses 5 to 11. Indeed, the light of the wicked goes out, and the flame of his fire gives no light. The light in his tent is darkened, and his lamp goes out above him. His vigorous stride is shortened, and his old scheme brings him down. For he is thrown into the net by his own feet, and he steps on the webbing. A snare seizes him by the heel, and a trap snaps shut on him. A noose is hidden for him in the ground, and a trap for him on the path. All around terror frightens him, and harries him at every step. You know what Bildad's saying here is pretty much correct. A wicked person is always looking over his shoulder, worried about the law, worrying about his victims catching up with him in some way. If you're doing evil, you're hurting people, some way, somehow, you're always concerned about that catching up to you. What Bildad's saying is technically correct. The problem is, he is saying it and applying it to Job, saying that Job, you know, basically your wickedness has caught up with you and God has taken this all away, which we know is not correct. Satan took it away, not because of Job's sin, but because Job was righteous. And even if Job was sinning and it was Job's fault, once again, it's a timing issue. Now is not the time when Job is in the process of weeping and trying to overcome this. It's not the time and the place and the way to bring it out, especially not in the middle of an argument. He's being a bad messenger. He's got the right message, but he's delivering to the wrong person and at the wrong time. That makes him a bad messenger. And at times, we need to learn from that lesson. We may be delivering a message that's technically a good message,
So if we're delivering it to the wrong person at the wrong time, we're being bad messengers and we're not helping the situation. Lesson 13, arguments hurt and destroy relationships. This comes from chapters 20 through 25, and I'm just going to do a quick summary of what is talked about in this. Keep in mind, this is a conversation that's happening between good friends. His friends, Zophar, Bildad, Elihu, and Eliphaz, and Elihu, were the first ones to come to him. They're probably some of his closest friends. This is what is said, and what has come of the friendship. Job starts out by saying, "Why have you wronged me these 10 times? Why do you persecute me?" Just a note of interest here, there's only 5 recorded statements from his 3 friends at this point in time. So you wonder whether or not there's, 5 other things that weren't recorded, or he's counting a couple of these as 2 things, I'm not quite sure. But in any case, Job asks why they've wronged him these 10 times. Why do they persecute him? Saying this to his good friends. Zophar then goes on to say that he's been wicked, and although he prospered for a short time, his wickedness caught up to him, and that the wicked only prosper for that time, just like it happened to Job, and it's his fault for what's happening. Job then goes on to call Zophar a liar. Once again, this is not exactly the best conversation you expect to see between good friends here. Eliphaz then lists all of Job's sins. Now, personally, if I'm down, something really bad happens to me, what I really want is my friends to come over and list all my sins, right? No. I mean, come on, this is not the way to help somebody out, is list all their sins. This is not a sign that this friendship is flourishing. This argument is hurting this friendship. Job goes on to say that God will vindicate him, and then he goes on to tell how evil succeeds a lot in the world. Bildad then concludes these chapters by saying that Job can't be innocent. Nobody can be innocent, and once again that Job must deserve these things. Arguments hurt and destroy relationships. And this is an example of what happened. Eliphaz started it. Job took the bait. Bildad and Zophar joined in. And now we got a relationship that's seriously hurt and could be destroyed. Lesson 14. Arguments lead to saying abnormal things. In chapters 26 through 31, Job goes on and spends 5 chapters telling about how great he is and how righteous he is. Now, I'm kind of assuming since he was a righteous man and God was proud of him, God liked him, that he was probably a humble man too. So I'm assuming if he was humble, he probably normally didn't go around telling people how great he was. And he just spent 5 chapters here telling about how wonderful and how great he was. Arguments lead to people saying things they normally would not say. And this is a perfect example. He heated the argument, he's mad at his friends, he tells them about how great he is, he says that they're no help for anybody, probably an exaggeration, they probably helped him in the past, and they probably help other people, and not doing too good right now, admittedly. And he says he's innocent, that he's done nothing wrong. That doesn't sound like something he would normally say, because I'm assuming he was probably a humble man, since God was so proud of him, since he was so righteous. Lesson 15 is be a peacemaker. Here, Job's 4th friend starts to speak, and this is Elihu. And this is a note of interest. Is this is the only person that, when God comes down and starts speaking, he says nothing bad about Elihu and what he says here. And what Elihu does is he tries to make peace. And how he does that, he goes to Job and says, "You were right on these points." He goes to his 3 friends and says, "You were right on these points." He doesn't go off and try to tell them where they're wrong on all these points. Because if you do that, if you see 2 people fighting and you want to make peace with them, and you go off and tell them where they're wrong in all these different things, what you're going to find is both sides are going to start attacking you. Because, if Elihu told Job why he was wrong, well, Job's not going to start arguing back. Whenever he went to Job's other 3 friends to say why they're wrong, they're going to naturally start arguing back. And so if you want to make peace with people, the best way to start is by pointing out where you agree with them and where they are correct. Because by doing that, both sides are going to like you. And so if you have a good relationship with both sides, you're more likely to be able to get them to reconcile and bring about peace. And so that's the thing. When we see the fight, we need to be a peacemaker. That's the 15th lesson. We don't want to join in the fight. We don't want to take sides. We want to try to make peace. We want to try to resolve the issue that's causing the problem. Lesson 16 is don't tell God how to do his job. And this is where God comes down and he decides to start laying down the law and put an end to all this. And he starts off by talking to Job. And he goes to Job and says, okay, where were you when I created the world? He goes through all these powerful animals he made it and all these things that man can't control. And says, Job, what about these? Do you know how I made these? Do you know how these survived? Were you there when I made these? Basically, he's humbling Job. He's going to Job and saying, hey, listen, you don't know anything. I created everything here, you see. I know everything. Don't tell me how to do my job. Basically, what we're finding Job doing in this book is back-talking to God. I know there's an issue with me and my kids right now. I don't like back-talking. Most parents don't put up with back-talking. And basically, God got tired of it. He came down and told Job, hey, don't call me unfair. Don't say I'm doing my job right, wrong. It's you don't know what you're talking about. I do. I know what I'm doing. I'm God. I know what I plan to do. I know what the outcome of this is all going to be. Lesson 17 and lesson 18 come from chapter 42 when God turns his attention to Job's three friends. Lesson 17 is speak correct things about God. One of the big things that Job's three friends get in trouble for, and the main thing, is they were speaking for God. They were saying, Job, we're speaking for God, and God says that you have done wrong. You have sinned, and this is why this is happening for you. We need to be very careful when we start saying this is what God said. We need to make sure we're taking it from, we're being very biblical with it. It's coming from the Bible. Because if we start adding our own, if we start, you know, adding our own word to God's word and start speaking in God's place, we may find ourselves out to have a very humbling experience very quickly. Elder Fry's three friends, you know, after all this, had to have Job pray for them to forgive them of their sins. They got talked down to by God. They were not having fun. This was not a good time for them right now. And lesson 18, which is in a way kind of summary of this whole book, something bad doesn't necessarily mean punishment. All these things were happening to Job, not because he did something wrong and God was punishing and trying to correct him. These things were being done to Job because he was righteous. He was being attacked by Satan in order to get him to sin, to get him to turn against God, not because he had done something wrong. So those are my 18 lessons for tonight. I basically wanted to go back to what I was talking about earlier in my last sermon, where I said fight the good fight of faith using Bible study, and I talked about our character study being one of those types of studies. And I thought I'd do one tonight to kind of give you an example. Go through the life of Job, which in the case of Job, it's pretty much a book study too. And this show the lessons and things you can learn about some of the tough situations in your life that you can apply to your life from Job's life. I'll now turn the service over to Don or Keith, whoever has the announcements.